Blog Talk Radio. It's Sunday evening, and welcome to Paz IM Radio. Your hosts for tonight's show are Robert Brining, Jeremy Dunn, and Jack McEnroe. They'll be taking your calls and speaking on the topic of the week. You're encouraged to call in and share some of your life experiences with us. The number to call is 347-215-9442. That number again, 347-215-9442. Welcome to Paz IM Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Paz IM Radio. I'm your host, Robert Brining, joined by my co-host this evening, Jack McEnroe. Jack, how are you doing this week?
I'm very good. How are you, Robert?
I'm well. Doing well.
Good.
Excited about tonight's show.
Say what?
I said I'm excited about tonight's show.
Good, good. And how are your? I haven't talked to you in a couple of weeks. How's your shingles and all that? Is it wrapped up?
Yeah, they're pretty much gone, thank God. You know what I mean? There are scars there, obviously, that I'm going to have for the rest of my life, but the shingles themselves are gone. There's no pain, none of that.
That's good.
How about you? Anything exciting with you going on?
I am about to embark on, like, a travel extravaganza, so I'm going to D.C. on Wednesday evening, and then that's for the Whitman Walker Clinic Masquerade on the Mall Gala with Merck and Living Positive by Design, and I'm emceeing, and I just finished making 4 masks, which I'm, like, so I'm doing outfit changes during the evening. And then I think they're going to take those, and there's a silent auction, so they're going to auction those off, and Miss America's going to be there, and it's good. And then I'm there until the 24th or 25th. The event's on the April 23rd, and then I go directly from there to swim camp in Fort Lauderdale, and I'm swimming training for 8 days. So it's very intensive, but that's my next couple weeks.
That sounds like tons of fun.
Well, the swimming actually is fun. I mean, we swim 2 workouts a day, so we swim about 4 hours a day, which is pretty grueling. But the weather is amazing, and the pool's outdoors, so you get super tan, and you kind of forget that you're killing yourself.
It's also one hell of a workout, too, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it's amazing. I mean, I did it last year, and it's really fun. And the good thing is you can eat whatever you want. You can eat like a pig because you're burning like 20,000 calories a day.
Oh, that's funny. So we have our guest on the line. I'm well. I'm actually really well. I'm just catching up on work. You know, I've had a lot of stuff put on hold because I was sick with the shingles. So I'm just catching up and trying to schedule shows and things of that nature.
Right on.
You know, trying to, do stuff with the website and cool things like that. But basically normal. So tonight's guest is Brandon Maxada, and he is a friend of mine, and I believe he's a friend of yours too, Jack. I first actually met him on Facebook. I became friends with Brandon, and you know, he reached out to me when I was stuck in a situation, and he was always just so gentle, and I think that's what attracts me to him as a person, because he is so, you know, open and so honest and so straight to the point. And you know, he is a part of this organization called ADAPT Advocacy Association. I'm having issues speaking tonight for some reason. I have my hand-free device on tonight, so I don't have my phone, so I'm like trying to like find things to do with my hands and forget it. I'm done. Left myself open. But anyway, we're gonna bring Brandon on, and he's gonna come on. We're gonna talk about the importance of ADAPT and you know the increase of the waiting list of all these people that are on the waiting list now, and all the states that are now having a list. So I thought it was important to bring him back on. He was on before, and I think, Jack, you were on with me when we had him on right after I spoke there at the summit in July last year.
Yeah. I'm interested to hear, because I'm not really as up on ADAPT as I should be, but I do know that there are, probably an increasing number of states that have waiting lists, and it's really scary because, I mean, you know, people can't get I'm sure I'll explain it, and we can talk about it, but ADAPT stands for AIDS Drug Assistance Program, and It's for people that are uninsured, and it helps them get the medication they need. And when there's a waiting list, it just means that people are going without meds that need it, and, you know, people will die. So it's kind of scary.
Yeah, and it's definitely a topic that a lot of, you know, people are talking about, and we're excited that we were going to have him on because they were wondering, like, with the North Carolina now having a list and all that stuff, what are they to do? So, you know, help me welcome Brandon Maxada to the show. Brandon, are you there?
Good evening, Robert. Good evening, Jack. How are you both doing?
Good.
Great, great.
Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me. Good to be on your show again.
Yes, yes. And so now you have a show here on Blog Talk Radio, too, so I was, you know, we can always talk about that as well. But, you know, how's that working out for you, the Moderate Solutions?
It is actually working out pretty well. We host a show every Thursday at 1 o'clock Eastern Time, and we invite political guests on from pretty much all over the spectrum to talk about just the state of politics in America today and kind of where how the center, the moderate voice, the independent voice within our political system just seems to have been drowned out by what we refer to as the radical left and the far right. And we just, you know, we have a good time. We get pretty in-depth on a lot of the issues, and just hopefully that we can add an additional voice to the whole political conversation that we have here in the country. So maybe we'll have to get you on sometime, Robert, and, you know, hopefully you can get your words out a little better than the start of time. Put the mark.
Well, I blame Jack.
You would think that with a hands-free device, you'd be used to that by now. But hey, I guess not.
I'm not.
Don't worry, Robert. I've been tongue-tied a few times on the show. So I feel your pain.
Right. Yeah, I know you understand. So first, I want to thank you for inviting me to the summit last year. I really had a good time, me and my partner Joe, when we came down, and I was able to speak for the first time. And you know, you gave me that gift of allowing me to share my story and talk a little bit about, you know, what PosIM is. And I just want to thank you for that first off.
Well, I'm glad you came. And Jack, I know you weren't at the summit, but I have to tell you, for those who were in the audience and listening to Robert speak, were just so inspired, loved his energy. There were so many people who came up to him afterwards and, you know, can I have your phone number? Can I have your email? I want to learn about what it is you're doing and how I can bring this back to my community. And Robert was laughing. He says, God, I feel like a celebrity after this. But, I mean, he knocked the ball out of the park. I mean, he really connected with the people. He has such a powerful message. So it was actually, I considered it our honor to have you there. And now I guess I technically should refer to you as boss, because Robert is now on the board of directors of the ADAP Advocacy Association. The board of directors seated him as well as Anthony Jackson out of New York City a couple months ago. So I guess I got to call you boss from now on.
Oh, God.
Don't be jealous, Jack.
I'm like, I barely do that.
Oh, my. So, Brandon, tell us a little bit about yourself personally. When were you diagnosed and, you know, how you found your niche? Because you're a lot on the political side of things where, you know, that's something that I don't really know too much about. So how did you get involved in that? Were you always one of those political debaters, or?
Oh, I got bit by the political bug at a very young age, and it's kind of like HIV. Once you get it, you're stuck with it. And you have to learn to live with it, because there are very few, if you don't have that political bug in you, a lot of people think, you know, you're nerdy or you're weird or, you know, what's up with this guy or girl? You know, how come, you know, they're into this political stuff and, you know, maybe not something else? And but no, I definitely got bit at a very young age, ran for office at a very young age. But I just feel very passionate about, you know, being involved in issues, and especially when it's an issue like HIV. And while it touches my life personally and it touches the lives of so many of my friends personally, I get drawn to issues when the people are the underdog, if you will, and that everything is stacked against them. The government is stacked against them. The companies are stacked against them. You know, the fact that we're in the richest country in the world, and I know we'll get into this later on in the show, but we're in the richest country in the world, and we have almost 1,000 people in this country waiting to access the very medications that we know keep them healthy, keep them productive, keep their mental health in a better state of mind and keep them out of the hospital. And it just, it really blows my mind. So I tend to get drawn to those issues that are an uphill battle, if you will.
But doesn't it frustrate you a little bit? I mean, the reason I'm political in a sense, I'm very liberal, and I the part that frustrates me is, you know, you watch the news and you see all these pundits battling back and forth, and it's the politics of it and the bureaucracy and the fact that it's like seems so difficult to get things done that makes me so frustrated that I just want to, like, you know, put my head in the sand and pretend it's not existing. So how do you deal with that sort of frustration of just like the political arena in general?
Well, every once in a while, Jack, if you hear like this really loud noise coming from Washington, D.C., it's usually me screaming.
Right.
I get frustrated, you know, but you have to keep in mind, you know, when you look at the U.S. Congress and the fact that you have, you know, almost 550 elected officials in the Congress, if you include all the members of the House, all the members of the Senate, and then all the delegates who can't vote but can debate on an issue. All right. Get 550 of your friends and put them in one room and come up with a decision on anything.
Right.
No,
right.
I mean, let's have a New Year's party. Where do you want to have it? What do you want to be the theme? Or, you know, let's do a fundraiser. Well, what issue do you want to do? You know, what type of fundraiser do you want to have? Do you want it to be a golf tournament, a dance, you know, so on and so forth? So when you get into political issues that really touch people's lives, the one thing you have to keep in mind is that while you may disagree with someone, and I think this is where we have kind of as a country gone astray, you should at least respect the other person's opinion. And those folks who aren't as supportive of HIV issues are usually because either they don't understand it, and HIV is no different than any other issue on Capitol Hill. Either there's some people who are really the leaders and they get the issue and they're out front, and then there's other people who just, you know, they don't get it. It's the same thing with national defense, transportation, you name it. So we're no different in that regard. But I think you have to keep in mind that when you have that many differing opinions, it's really hard to come to a consensus. And I think that's the reason we're in the plight that we're in today, is that the left has gotten too extreme, the right's gotten too extreme, and they don't talk to each other. So they end up fighting, they end up posturing. Both parties are to blame. And, you know, the Republicans, it's funny to see them going after the Democrats right now about railing things through the Congress in the dead of night and all these secret deals and whatever, because they were guilty of the same damn thing when they were in charge of the Congress and they had the president in the White House. So, you know, but at the same time, you still have to keep doing it. You have to keep plugging away. This is people's lives at stake. You know, you referenced it earlier. You know, when we were in this plight with ADAP waiting lists being in thousands a couple years ago, people actually died. They died in Kentucky. They died in West Virginia. They died in South Carolina. And those were just the states that we know of.
Right.
You know, like, and now I have a, Brandon, for, I'm trying to just to figure it out and take it from a different approach, because obviously I see the importance for ADAP. Does every other disease have, like, do other diseases have waiting lists for their medications, or are they treated for, like, say, their cancer, like, whether they have the money or not?
Well, every disease is clearly different.
Right.
And, you know, I think in many ways we are very organized, we're very effective, but there is still a political lightning rod associated with HIV. There are still a lot of people who look at it as a behavioral disease, whether it's engaging in unprotected sex or, you know, IV drug use. And I think there that stigma is still attached to it, so that you have some people who, as Jack said earlier, you know, he gets so frustrated he sticks his head in the sand. I think there are elected officials who have their heads in the sand, and they just view it as a behavioral disease. It's, you know, it harkens you back to the dark days of the early 80s when the disease first, you know, came out, and it was referred to as, you know, the gay cancer. And I think we still, the biggest obstacle we have to overcome is the stigma. When you look at a lot of other diseases or conditions, you know, you look at autism, and autism does not carry the stigma that HIV does. I mean, you see autism everywhere. Autism's color is blue. You see blue everywhere. It's popular to be supporting autism and autism research and all these different initiatives about autism.
Well, and every other, I mean, breast cancer, like, there's, I mean,
exactly.
Every other disease. I mean, I think HIV, like, I can't really think of another, well, I mean, maybe there's like mental diseases that have some sort of stigma on it, but it's still, there's no blame placed directly on the person who's suffering from it. So it's very original in that sense that it, there's such a severe stigma on being HIV positive.
You're absolutely right, Jack. And, you know, our organization did a white paper. We did an issue paper some years ago where we basically were pointing out the fact that the U.S. is sending billions of dollars in foreign aid to support the president's emergency plan for emergency AIDS assistance, PEPFAR, which is an admirable thing. It's something most Americans support. But at the same time, in this country, we were seeing either very paltry increases in federal funding or robbing Peter to pay Paul, you know, taking money out of one program to give a bump in, you know, an increase in another program. And it was ironic because when we were doing this research and we were going through all the data and all the appropriations bills that showed that, you know, the international relief was getting huge increases as the United States was basically being flat funded. And it was ironic because when we looked and did a research on images, the images overseas of, you know, the Caribbean and Africa were images, they were positive images. They were images that reinforced the do-good nature of the American people. You have, you know, a small little African baby, and the image that was being portrayed was these AIDS drugs, you know, supporting this AIDS relief, with buying these AIDS drugs is making this young little baby healthy. But yet when you looked at the images in the United States, they were much more negative. They were nowhere near as positive, and it was usually an image of, you know, and I'm going to, you know, maybe say something politically incorrect, but a really scrawny-looking, almost doped-up gay man, you know. And the image was, it's this guy's behavior that got him in this position. But yet the image of, you know, over in Africa was this poor little innocent baby. And it all comes back to what Jack said. It's the stigma. There is still a significant stigma associated with this disease. That, to me, is our biggest obstacle. It's not a political party. It's not 550 different opinions on Capitol Hill. It is the fact that we have not successfully overcome the issue of the negative stigma with this disease. And until we do, I think we're going to continue to see waiting lists. We're going to continue to see political infighting on an issue as important as this. And, you know, it's not like it was in the 1980s. If you look at the demographics, sure, gay men or men who have sex with men are clearly disproportionately affected. But guess what? The HIV infection rates among teenagers below the age of 16 are skyrocketing. HIV infection rate among people who are 55 and older are going up significantly. Look at what this disease is doing to communities of color, a disproportionate impact on women. It's not a gay disease anymore, but that's the image that a lot of people still view HIV as, the gay disease, the behavioral disease, and there's other more, quote-unquote, more important causes we should be supporting.
Right. That's actually really interesting. I haven't really thought quite on those terms, that there is a completely different perspective given to AIDS in Africa. It's seeing this as like global issue that we all need to get behind, and that's really true. And I mean, of course, that is actually true. But also, you know, domestically, it is still a huge problem that we need funding too. And it is, you're right. It's definitely different propaganda. It's different messaging. It's a different PR, the way we approach domestic HIV. And it's still, I think you're right, even though it's not, I mean, you know, the numbers, it is disproportionately a gay men's disease domestically, but it still obviously affects all genders and socioeconomic groups and cultures. So that's a very interesting point.
So just recently, Brandon, you brought up, you created an open letter video to President Obama. And I have to say, it's very powerful.
We did. You know, we are trying to right now, and this is what I think why people are so emotional on this issue, AIDS advocates, people in our community who lobby for HIV funding and HIV prevention and HIV support services every day. You look at how many billions of dollars under the previous administration that President Bush, when the banks needed help in the bailout, you look at how many billions of dollars this president, when he came into office, with the stimulus, and then the auto bailout. And, you know, and most recently his the mortgage, the failed mortgage foreclosure bailout, where basically it was rewarding people for making stupid decisions and buying homes that they couldn't afford. You look at all this money that's being spent between the previous president and this president, in the billions, the hundreds of billions, and yet here we are asking for $126 million, because that's what, in this current fiscal year, that's the federal funding shortfall that would eliminate these waiting lists, $126 million, compared to how many hundreds of billions of dollars over the last 2 years, and we can't get it. You know, we're still fighting, and you know, we've basically been told it's not a crisis. And until it reaches the level of a crisis, you're not going to get the president's not going to sign on. There's other priorities. He feels that the health care reform will fix it down the road. Well, I say fixing it down the road is hogwash. We have a problem right now. We have 938 Americans in this country, and probably more, because in states like Louisiana, it's against their state law to have a waiting list. So, you know, they kind of use gimmicks to get around that down in Louisiana. So we know it's more than 938 people. So all we're trying to do is get $126 million passed as an emergency supplemental. Basically what that means is, even though Congress has appropriated the money for this current fiscal year, they oftentimes will go back and pass a supplemental. And it's basically to fund programs that maybe something's changed and they didn't fund enough, they didn't appropriate enough money. Well, clearly our program, the AIDS Drug Assistance Program, is one of those areas. And we're trying to get $126 million. And there's just a lot of people who are at the point where they want to hold the president's feet to the fire. Because if the president used his bully pulpit the same way he did in health care reform to get behind this very small increase, we would have it probably relatively quickly. So we did. We put together a YouTube video. We called it an open letter to President Obama. You can find it on our YouTube channel, which is ADAP, A-D-A-P, Advocacy, all one word. And it basically it offers a historical perspective. You know, in the 1930s, you had people during the Great Depression who were in line to get food. And yet the United States was supposed to be one of the wealthiest countries in the world. In the 60s, you had homelessness, poverty, you know, and Lyndon Johnson came with the Great Society because people were waiting to get access to even health care or very basic necessities. And here we are in 2010, again, the most wealthiest country in the world, and we just keep seeing more and more people get put on these waiting lists. When what's really frustrating, and I guess this gets back to, you know, Jack's point earlier about how, you know, how do you get involved in politics, because it's got to be so frustrating. Look at where we are as a society as it relates to HIV right now. Our message as a country, our government's message is get tested, get tested, get tested. Okay, so people go get tested. Coming from the medical community, the message is hit the disease quick, hit it hard. Hit the disease quick, hit it hard. Go get your medications and go get treated. All right, so the government's saying go get tested. The medical community's saying if you're positive, go get your medications. Okay, and then, sorry, folks, we don't have enough money. We're sorry you're positive. We know you need the medications, but we can't give them to you right now, so why don't you go stand in line? I mean, how is that for somebody who's really struggling? Maybe they think they have been exposed. Maybe they're not feeling well. You know, they kind of have that suspicion deep down in their heart that, okay, maybe I'm HIV positive. Why go get tested? If you know that you don't have health insurance and you might not get the drugs that are going to keep you well, it's the psyche is almost, it's better off not to know.
Right. And I think, can you just kind of clarify, just because for people that aren't familiar with ADAP, what exactly it is? I mean, I know and Robert knows, but, you know, just kind of
sure.
An overview. Yeah.
Well, the country, as many of you know, we just celebrated the loss of Ryan White, who was the young boy who kind of really, I think, garnered the national conscience on HIV, who was infected through a blood transfusion. He was living in Indiana, and the school, you know, basically kicked him out. And that's when we were in the heyday of all the fear over HIV. Well, in the 90s, there was the nation's only comprehensive HIV services law is named after here. It's named after him. It's called the Ryan White Comprehensive AIDS Program. And Title II, or Part B of it, is called the AIDS Drug Assistance Program. And it is a program that is designed for people who either are uninsured or are underinsured and cannot get access to their medication, that we know keeps them healthy, keeps them productive, they can get access to these medications. It's a federal state partnership, so they can go to the state and say, I'm HIV positive, I'm a resident of the state, I have no insurance, or maybe my insurance doesn't cover my prescriptions, I need these drugs. And they just have to prove their eligibility based on income, so on and so forth, and then they can get these drugs. The problem is that ever since this program has existed, since the early 90s, it has been perpetually underfunded. And waiting lists have dogged this program for most of its history. There was about maybe 1 or 2 years where there was no waiting lists. And it's just really unfortunate, because this is another example of, you know, the federal government not living up to its commitment. The federal government used to spend, used to appropriate about 72 to 74% of ADAP funding nationwide. And then the states kicked in the rest, that remaining 28%. And that was really where the driver behind the waiting list at the time, is because the states weren't coughing up enough money. Well, a lot of the lobbying efforts and advocacy efforts were focused on the states and said, hey, you know, Alabama, you need to cough up your share of the money. Hey, Illinois, you need to cough up your share of the money. And advocates in all these states were very successful. Well, now the problem is the federal share, the federal appropriation for this program hasn't kept pace. So now in fiscal year 2010, the federal government's only appropriating about 54%. So we went from 72, 74% down to 52%. That's one of the biggest reasons why we have these waiting lists right now. And the reason there's 938 people in 10 states that are waiting to access these medications, because the federal government is not living up to its end of the bargain.
Brandon, do you have this list of states?
Excuse me?
The list of states, do you have them off the top of your head?
I do. Idaho, Iowa, Kentucky, Montana, North Carolina, South Carolina, South Dakota, Tennessee, Utah, and Wyoming. There are probably another 6 states that soon as next week or maybe next month have a waiting list. Nebraska, for example, Indiana, for example, have kind of weaved in and out of having waiting lists. They'll have a waiting list and then they'll eliminate it, and then they'll have a waiting list and then they eliminate it. But what's really alarming to a lot of folks is the fact that 75% of those people on waiting lists reside in the South.
Right.
That this disease is not the same disease that in the early 80s, you know, was striking San Francisco, New York City, Chicago. I mean, this disease has spread, you know, just as it spread outside the gay community, it has spread across this country, and it has disproportionately impacted our southern communities, our rural communities, and a lot of these communities don't have the history, whereas, you know, San Francisco, having so many years of history with this disease, learned how to create a care structure to take care of these people so that they don't fall through the cracks. Well, you know, Burlington, North Carolina doesn't have that. And if
Right.
you look at, you know, for example, North Carolina has 400 people on a waiting list out of the 938 total. So that's almost half of the waiting list is in one state.
And, I mean, just to sort of reiterate the severity and, like, how important this is, I mean, these are people where, you know, in order to qualify for ADAP, I know it's different for every state, but your income level has to be at a certain level, which is usually not very high. And so these people are trying to acquire medications that can cost upwards of, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars per month. And they're life-saving medications. And I know for a fact, I had friends in the 90s who had no other options except for getting their drugs through ADAP, and it saved their lives. And, you know, they became amazingly productive members of society because of ADAP, and it's a life-saving, amazing program. And people will die. I mean, 400 people on a waiting list, it's like, and you don't, I mean, who knows what state of health these people are in, and if these medications can save lives, and if they're not getting access to them, people are going to start dying again. That's the black and white of it.
No, you're absolutely right, Jack. I mean, it goes back to the whole thing about we're telling people go get tested, they go get tested. We're telling them to get access to care quickly, and then, oh, by the way, you know, be on a waiting list. And you have to keep in mind that one of the biggest things you have to remember, if you're HIV positive and you're going on your medications, is adherence. The more you adhere to your medication regimen, the more effective you will be at controlling the disease. And if you have people who are, you know, weaving in and out of taking their medications because they can't afford it, that really is problematic for them. And not only, you know, physically in terms of what could be the impact on their health physically, but also mentally. I mean, just imagine what it's like for somebody who, okay, God, I have to take these medications every day, and then, you know, they show up next month to get the refill, and it's, oh, I'm sorry, we don't have enough money, we can't do this. And it is tied to income. The federal poverty level in this country is only about, if you make $12,500 a year, you are living at or below the federal poverty level. And it depends on the state, but, you know, even if it's a state that eligibility is 200% of federal poverty, that's only about $24,000 a year. That's not a lot of money. And Jack, your point to these medications, the average is about $1,200 a month. Well, you do the math. That's half your income. Even if you're making $24,000 a year, half your income is going to your medication.
Right.
So what's left over to pay your rent, you know, buy your food, you know, and or these other, you know, your heat, your air, you know, these other life necessities. So it is a program that is also cost effective, in that, okay, $1,200 a month, or what's the alternative? This person doesn't take their medication, maybe gets hit with a couple of very nasty opportunistic infections, and then spending a weekend or a week in the hospital. And now you've just run up, you know, $70,000, $120,000 in medical bills.
Exactly.
For a weekend. So it's a very cost-effective program, and that's why we're really trying to beat the drum and to send the message to the president and to Congress that, you know, our campaign theme is end the waste. You know, it is time to end this wait. Enough is enough. If you can bail out the automakers and Wall Street and, you know, people who couldn't afford to buy the million-dollar home that they bought, then the least you can do is ante up $126 million just to meet your commitment of what you're supposed to be funding this program at so that these people aren't on waiting lists.
Well, the other thing that I'm sorry to interrupt, but the other thing that I know that goes on within ADAP is when the budgets are really low, they also make cuts within what they offer and with things that aren't covered. Like, I think, I at least know in New York, when it had the most funding, you know, I'm sure there's never, we could always use more funding, but, you know, they used to fund vitamins and they would fund, like some of the nutritional supplements and all that stuff. And then I think those are the first things to go when there's budget cuts, because they try to give people the necessities. So it's like all the other stuff that seems like it's very needed, but it may be something that people can live without, and that's the first thing to go, which is unfortunate.
Well, right. It's not just about the waiting list. I mean, the other cost containment strategies that states often adopt are what's called changes in their formulary. And the formulary is basically the drugs that the state has determined it will cover. So if you're on ADAP, it will cover, you know, drug 1, 2, 3, 4, but it won't cover drug 5 and 6, you know. And then you go to another state like New York, which has, you know, one of the more liberal formularies, and you're okay, it covers all 6 drugs. You know, and the other thing to keep in mind with these medications is the side effects that are associated with them. So sometimes it's not just actually getting the antiretrovirals, but it's also getting the, you know, the anti-nausea medication, or, you know, any other type of side effect you may have as a result of these medications, anti-diarrhea medication,
right.
You know, that help you. And if they're not covered, you know, so it's great, you have your HIV medications and it's controlling the virus, but you feel like hell. You feel like hell running over you.
Right.
So, you know, it's not just a waiting list. There's a lot of other things that come into play that truly impact people's lives.
Right.
I agree. I just want to real quick let everybody know that we open the lines. You guys can give us a call here at the show and speak to Brandon if you have a question maybe about ADAPT, or you live in one of those states and would like to share your experience. You can give us a call at 347-215-9442. I do have a caller on the line, so I'm going to go ahead and bring area code 828. What's your name and where are you calling from?
My name's Trace.
Hi, Trace. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks. I'm part of the Pause IM community, and
welcome.
I listen on the thanks and I do the listen live, and it doesn't work. However, I would like to say I'm a clinical microbiologist by trade, HIV positive, and some of the differences that I would suggest that you would see in this disease versus other diseases is exponential growth of this disease worldwide versus cancers and other diseases that would not have that same expression.
Right, right.
I heard you bring up the other diseases, right?
Right.
Right.
And how they're handled. Typically in cancers, we don't see exponential growth unless there's
right.
an event. And
right.
with HIV worldwide, we continue to see exponential growth of this disease. And that was one
right.
of the differences in this disease versus other diseases that might give it a different look by the government.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that should affect the priority, definitely, of how it's examined by the government.
No, that is a good point. I mean, you go back to President George W. Bush, and most people would say the guy did an amazing job with his international emergency relief, that he truly made an impact, a positive impact on these countries that had epidemic-level infections, made a positive impact on, you know, people's lives. I mean, truly people's lives. But the problem is what he did here in this country with a failed policy like abstinence-only education, you know, the fact that the funding under the AIDS Drug Assistance Program was pretty much flatlined, you know, domestically he failed. He did such a good job internationally, but here on this country he failed, and I think, you know, the point that you raised, Jack, about other diseases, I just think it comes back to HIV is not a pretty disease. It's not a pretty cause. You don't see, whereas you see a lot of celebrities come out and do a lot of good things, you don't see the same level that you do with something like autism or something like cancer or something like diabetes. And I think that really is something that creates an uphill battle for a lot of us, because whereas we do have a lot of great spokespeople and great advocates and leaders, the stigma that we have to get over, that hurdle of stigma, it's like running. Jack, you're a swimmer. It's like you're getting up on the blocks, you're getting ready to start the race, and the judge says, Jack, by the way, you've got to wait 45 seconds before you can start, and everybody else goes first.
Right.
You know, now you may be able to win, you may be able to catch up, but it puts you at such a disadvantage, and that's really what we experience with, you know, trying to fight for our share of the pie against a lot of these other diseases. And make no mistake about it, it is a very small pie that we are fighting over. And when it's popular to throw money at autism and it's not popular to throw money at HIV, guess where we're going to be? We're going to be
right.
told, you know, you got to wait 45 seconds before you can start the race with everybody else.
Right.
That's interesting. So I know you do a whole bunch of events throughout the year. You know, with the association and stuff like that. Can you tell us what you have coming up? Because I know you just did a wine tasting, right? I think I saw on Facebook.
Well, one of the, you know, like any other nonprofit organization, we have no money, so we try and raise money. And one of the fun ways that we have done it the last couple of years is we typically have two or three wine tastings throughout the year. And we will invite members of Congress to come speak. We've had Senator Richard Burr from North Carolina, Delegate Donna Christian Christensen from the Virgin Islands, Representative Ileana Loss-Lathan from Florida, Joseph Zhao from Louisiana. You know, we've had a good Republicans, Democrats, senators, representatives, and we use it as an opportunity to raise money to help the organization, but also raise awareness. And we've been very fortunate in that regard because we oftentimes clearly we get our friends, we get our advocates, the people who are fighting on this issue every day, but oftentimes we get a lot of people too who want to help. You know, they're not involved in it on a day-to-day basis. You know, they have their job either at the, you know, grocery store or the bank or, you know, somewhere, some federal agency, and they want to learn more. They want to be able to do more in this area, and maybe it's because it's the disease has touched someone, a friend's life, a relative's life. So we really use it also as an opportunity to raise awareness. But beyond that, the biggest thing that we're doing right now is we are using the virtual world, you know, online systems to do trainings, to offer trainings in these states that each have waiting lists. Because there are what are called patient assistance programs. Sometimes they're known as prescription assistance programs. And all the pharmaceutical companies have them. And it's basically a program where they will give their product, their medication, for free to somebody if they qualify. It's kind of like their own little AIDS drug assistance program. And what we found is that a lot of the people in the state who work on ADAP-related issues, case managers or and whatever, people in the health department, we found one of two things. Either they didn't know these programs existed, these patient assistance programs, or two, they know about them, but they don't know really anything about them. What are the eligibility requirements? How do you apply? How many, you know, months of medication can you get? So what we've done is we have invited all the pharmaceutical companies to come and talk about their individual patient assistance program, and we're targeting all the states that have waiting lists. We just hosted our first one last Wednesday for the states of Arkansas and Louisiana, and every Wednesday we're going to hold one of these virtual sessions. In the virtual world, we have a virtual conference system, so there's no travel. You don't have to worry about going to your supervisor and getting, you know, a travel expenditure. All you need is your computer. You can log on. You can hear these people speaking. You can ask them questions. You see their presentations. And it's really, I think, is going to help at least temporarily a lot of these people who are falling through the cracks. But that does not abdicate our responsibility to still fight for this $126 million this year, but then also to make sure that next year Congress is ponying up their share of the funding as well. So we stay busy, bottom line.
Yeah, you have a lot coming up. And do you have any more info on the summit at all? Because I know I you were in the process of trying to figure all that out. I didn't know if you...
Yeah, we are going to have our annual summit here in Washington, D.C. again. We are probably going to do it July 5th, 6th, and 7th, right after the holiday. We will host a congressional briefing on the Senate side, so we will have a briefing on Capitol Hill. And we'll invite people from across the country to come speak. And really what we use the congressional briefing to do is educate members of Congress and their staff. And whereas anybody can attend, our real target audience are those staff members who are advising their senators on how to vote on certain issues. And, of course, the whole purpose of this briefing will be on the AIDS Drug Assistance Program. But the summit itself will be about 2.5 days of briefings, informational sessions where people can come here, physicians, advocates, like, you know, Robert, last year you talked about using social media to expand your network and communicate with people who are also HIV positive. So it really, the topics are endless in terms of what we cover. We try and offer a lot of different perspectives, touch on a lot of different issues from funding to prevention strategies, and like in your case, we went out into social media as a prevention strategy. And we really try to get the people that we try to get to attend are people living with HIV. We're not trying to get government folks. We're not trying to get pharmaceutical industry folks. The people that we really try and get to attend our summit are people who are living with the disease, fighting in the trenches, and dealing with this disease day in and day out.
Can you... go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say that the summits themselves are a lot of fun. You know, the conference that I went with, you know, last July, Brandon, was the first time I ever been to like a conference like that where I've actually met other people who were out working in, you know, the AIDS and HIV community field and things of that nature, and actually being able to connect with them one-on-one. And I think that was what was I needed so much of, was just that interaction with other people who were in, you know, who were living with the disease. And I think that's what the summit really does. It really brings that blend together.
The summits do three things. They give you access to information. That's clearly one. I think of some of the speakers that, you know, even your presentation, I mean, so many people came up to you afterwards and were like, oh, my God, I never thought of using social media as an outreach. So it's information. It's getting access to information that can truly have an impact on people's lives. It's participation. It's being able to feel like you are a part of something and meeting new people, networking, building relationships so that you can, instead of reinventing the wheel, just call, pick up the phone and say, hey, I saw your presentation or I met you at this conference. I would like to do the same thing in my community. Where do I start? And then the other thing that it does is it gives you access. I mean, as a hired gun, I can go up to Capitol Hill and, you know, meet Senator John Doe and say, you need to do this. Okay, thank you. Thanks for coming. We'll consider you. But if you're a constituent of Senator John Doe and you're walking in there and saying, I voted for you, or my family voted for you. I've lived in your state for X number of years. HIV affects my family, affects me. I want you to support this. That is so much more powerful than a hired lobbyist or a hired advocate or somebody here in Washington, D.C., going in. So it gives you access to the people who make the decisions, because you have to keep in mind, and this is part of the reason why we did this YouTube video, was until the president and until members of Congress hear from you and I and Jack and all of our other friends and colleagues in our world, they're not going to think it's a problem. They're going to think maybe it's just some isolated incident or whatever. We have to raise the level of awareness so that they see it as the crisis it is, and then they act accordingly.
Cool.
Jack, I thought you had a question. That's why I didn't say anything.
My question was more
by my answer. He was speechless.
I was finding a tissue. my question was sort of just a little a change of gears, but it was basically to address someone who maybe, you know, newly diagnosed, either, you know, doesn't have insurance or is really young or, you know, unemployed or whatever, and how they, if they've maybe never really heard of ADAP before, how they apply for it, what, you know, what action should they take to get in touch with someone and find out about the program and how they can, if there is not a waiting list, how they can get on and get assistance.
Jack, that's a great question. There's a lot of ways you can go about doing it. I mean, you can either contact us and we can help navigate for you, how to go about doing it. But you can go to the local AIDS service organization in your community. And, you know, again, that will depend on what community you're in. I mean, some of them have half a dozen. Others, you know, you got to go 40 miles before you can reach the nearest AIDS service organization.
Right.
But then you could also, if you want to bypass there, you can go to your physician and ask your physician, because a lot of times physicians are the person who they're aware of it. You need a physician's order that says, my patient is HIV positive. They need to have access to these medications. So you could certainly go to your physician. You can go to local health department, and you could even every state has what's called a state ADAP office. You know, you can go online and do the search, and if you're living in Iowa, you know, find out what the number is for the Iowa State ADAP director. Call them up and say, you know, I'm HIV positive. I'm a resident of Iowa. I believe I'm eligible for this program. I don't have any insurance. I'd like to get access to my medication so that I can be healthy, and you know, they'll help you from there. So it's really not for a lack of available ways to find out how you can access the program. I think the biggest obstacle is just a lot of people don't know the program exists.
Right.
Once you do know it exists, and that's, you know, part of why I'm here this evening with the two of you, once you know it exists, you have so many ways that you can figure out how to access this program. So,
and isn't there, I don't know if it's state by state, but I do know for a fact, I think in New York, they do, there's a version of the program where if you do have insurance, but for some reason you lost your job or you can no longer afford to pay for it, ADAP will actually take over the payment, the insurance payments, because that's actually cheaper. Is that correct?
Yes. The last time, with most laws,
They have to be reauthorized.
Robert, I'm hearing a little bit of feedback.
Yeah, I think it's on your end.
Is it on my end? Okay.
Because I only hear it when you talk.
Okay. Well, it's gone now, so I wave my magic wand. I took care of it. Yes, the last time Ryan White was reauthorized, whenever a law is passed by Congress, it has to be typically every 3, 5, 7 years, it has to go through what's called a reauthorization process. And that's basically is they reaffirm the law, they repass the law. The last time Ryan White was reauthorized, they included that you can use Part B funding for health insurance continuation. So if, say, you had your job had insurance, and your insurance covered your HIV meds, but then you lost your job, you could thereby go to the state AIDS office, and rather than paying for your medications, they will pay for your COBRA or your health insurance so that you can continue to get your health insurance or your medications through the health insurance policy that you had. So that is absolutely right. And that's just as effective as, you know, being enrolled on ADAP, and probably more effective because you don't have a lot of the formulary restrictions that you do if you were on the state ADAP program.
Well, and then I would think in a lot of cases as well, I mean, ADAP covers medications, and but it doesn't cover, like, let's say you break your leg or you need to go to a hospital for some other service. Your insurance hopefully would cover that, whereas ADAP is basically just drug assistance, correct?
Right.
Right. Cool.
Cool. So that sounds, you know. So what can people do who are sitting at home? Who can they call? Who do they have to email to try to influence people to get more funding?
Well, they need to do a couple things. They need to call the president. There is a White House switchboard that you can call. You can contact the White House, the Office of National AIDS Policy. Jeff Crowley is the director. When President Obama nominated Jeff or appointed Jeff to that position, for those baseball fans listening in, clearly hit a grand slam. Jeff is a great guy. I've known him for years. I don't think we could have a better national AIDS czar than Jeff Crowley. Call Jeff's office and you know, communicate that to him. But your listeners need to also call your two members of Congress. Doesn't matter what political party they are. If you're a Democrat and you live in a state with two Republican senators, doesn't matter. You need to call them. Vice versa. If you're a Republican and you live in a state with two Democratic senators, doesn't matter. You need to call the both of them. They still work for you. And then, of course, you need to find out who your representative is in the House of Representatives and do the same thing, because unless they hear from you and I and everybody out there listening in and our neighbors and friends who are impacted by this disease, they are not going to think it's a problem. If they don't think it's a problem, they're not going to do it. There's so many other things going on in Washington, D.C. It has to raise to the level of a crisis for them to truly start to act on it.
There you go. Well, we are down to the last couple minutes of the show. Somebody actually has a question in the chat room, so let me see this. This may sound silly, but is there actually a drug that HIV/AIDS has a Johnson status? What? That makes no sense. I think I'm confused.
Good screening, Robert.
That doesn't make any sense to me. I misunderstand what he's writing.
I think what he's asking is, you look at Magic Johnson and the fact that he's been positive for so many years, and the guy just looks healthy. Doesn't look like there's anything wrong. I think maybe that's what he's getting at with this question. And is there a magic drug or procedure? No, but that's the whole purpose of these antiretroviral drugs. I mean, you can come to our summit and listen to a physician talk about the virology of the disease and how these drugs work and the interactions and why you take certain drugs to do certain things. Again, you know, but the bottom line is, yes, these drugs exist. They're the drugs that we're talking about that are funded through this AIDS Drug Assistance Program, and that's why we're fighting so hard to get them, because we know from the medical community that if you take these medications, if you adhere to your regimen, you will eventually get better. And certainly there are cases where there's side effects or cases where there's resistance, or maybe the drug starts to fail because the disease is always changing. So I'm speaking generally, in general terms, that these medications will help sustain your health and get the virus down to the goal of having your HIV virus be undetectable. And that means it's still in your body, but when they do the blood test and they try and find the virus, it's at such a low level that they consider it undetectable. Now, of course, if you stop taking the medications, the virus will fight its way back. But that's, I think, what he's getting at is the Magic Johnson status, that you know, he's taking his regimen, he's taking his medication, and he has been undetectable for I don't know how many years, probably 10-plus years now. So it puts you in a position that you're living a more productive and healthier life.
Yeah, he's talking about, that's exactly what he was talking about, because he's putting some more in here, and he says, because Magic Johnson appears to be HIV-free, and the way I look at it is you can't tell just by looking at somebody if they have HIV, you know, from the outside.
Well, as soon as he stops taking his medications, and it's different in every person, the virus will start to slowly come back. So he's not HIV-free. The HIV is undetectable. There's a big difference between saying that he's cured and he doesn't have HIV and saying that his virus is undetectable. It's not like With cancer, when the cancer goes into remission, you know, there's no cancer in the body. It's not that, you know, you haven't been cured and you're not in remission. It is there. It's just at such a low level that they can't find it with the tests that they have today. However, the minute you stop taking those drugs and continually stop taking those drugs, rest assured it will be coming back.
Well, and I've heard, I'm obviously not a doctor, nor do I play one on television, but I've heard even if it's undetectable in your bloodstream, for some reason it's really crafty and it can hide like deep in your brain and deep in your different bodily organs and yeah, like you said, as soon as you quit taking your medications and it comes back with a vengeance. So that's why it's important that everyone has the medications, because they are so much different than they were in, you know, the late 80s and early 90s, and they are very, very effective. And it's quite a shame that, you know, over a few million dollars, when we're spending I don't know how many millions of dollars or billions on the wars every day, that we can't save lives here domestically that could easily be, you know, healthy, vibrant people if they just had a few pills.
Amen, brother. I, you know, earlier when I got on my soapbox about the bank bailout and the auto bail, you know, I didn't even fail to mention the war. You know, I mean, the money that we are spending everywhere across the board, the fact that we can't pony up $126 million is really just, it's mind-boggling to me.
Yeah, it is. So, Brandon, where can people, obviously they can go to the ADAPT Association, I'm sorry, ADAPTAdvocacyAssociation.org to find out more information about the association, but where can they find you if they want to, you know, interested in having you maybe come speak to them or they have questions?
The best thing is that website, and they can just shoot,
okay.
They can join our listserv for that, you know, it's free to join the ADAPT Advocacy Association. You'll be on our listserv, so you get all our alerts and newsletters and that sort of thing. But also, you know, email is on there, and you can just shoot me an email. And, you know, even if it's a question of, you know, I want to take you up, I want to write my two senators and my congressman, but I don't know where to start. You know, shoot me an email and, you know, tell me what your zip code is, and I'll find who your representatives are and get you their contact information so that you can, you know, write the emails or make the phone calls.
There you go. It's that easy. Brandon, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure. I did also want to congratulate you on being featured in HIV Plus magazine in the top 25 of today's LGBT leaders working to ensure the fight against HIV rages on. So congratulations.
Oh, I had two colleagues on the phone here with me who were also honored, so it was a pleasure being up there with the two of you.
Right on. Next year we'll be top 10.
Brandon, again, just give a plug to your radio show since people are here.
It is on Blog Talk Radio. It is Moderate Solutions, Moderate-Solutions, and we air it every Thursday at 1 o'clock.
There you go. All right, Brandon, Robert, you have yourself a great night, and I will talk to you probably in July. Well, I'll talk to you soon, but I'll see you in July.
Sounds good. Robert, Jack, thanks for the time. You two take care of yourselves.
Right on. Thank you.
Thanks, Brandon. All right. Saying that kind of is like a tongue twister for me. the ADAPT Advocacy Association.org. It just, I don't know, it seems like I can't tell it. Oh, my Lord. So let's see. So do you have anything going on with Living Positive by Design? Since we have a couple minutes left.
Yeah, no, it's great. We have planned out most of our upcoming year with in case people don't know by now, it's my HIV education campaign with Merck, and we are, our next city, like I just mentioned, is D.C., which, scarily enough, the 2008 studies just came out, and D.C. has the highest rate in the country of HIV. They estimate that 3% of the entire population is HIV positive, and there might be as much as another 3% that doesn't even know that they're positive, so that's kind of really freaky. So we're going to D.C., and then I know we're going to L.A. this year, and I can't think of the other cities off the top of my head, but I got a full schedule, so I'm excited about it.
And they can find more information on that. What is it, Living Positive by Design?
LivingPositiveByDesign.com, and then if you just follow me on, if you go to my website, I'm trying to put updates on there. I just had someone redo my site, so it's up to date, and I'm on Facebook and Twitter and all that stuff. I'm sort of addicted to Twitter.
Yeah, I've seen your post lately. Yes, absolutely. So you guys can find more information on Jack at jackmackinroth.com and more information on me and the radio show at www.posim.com. And don't forget, you guys can go to iTunes and also download any of our past shows.
And how many downloads are we up to? We're up
27,000.
Oh, not bad.
Not bad at all. Not too shabby. So you have a great night. Thanks for tuning in.
All right, baby. I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.